Hello, and welcome to the 121st episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you can jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in." I've been very pleased by the steady growth of Admission Straight Talk, and for that I have to thank you, my listeners, and also the past guests. I appreciate all my past guests. However, there was one show that just shot out of the gate like a Kentucky Derby winner, and that was the interview that I had just over 2 years ago with Nikki DeSilva of the University of Toronto's Rotman School of Management, where we focused on the video essay. That show has almost double the downloads of our next closest show. And I think that one of the reasons it has been so wildly popular is that, A, Nikki did a great job and was terribly informative in that interview, but she also leads one of the most innovative admissions offices in the world. And we are going to discuss the latest and greatest to come out of Rotman's admissions office and also see how the now standard elements of Rotman's application are doing, specifically the video essay. I'm delighted to have back Nikki DeSilva, Recruitment and Admissions Director for Rotman's full-time MBA program. Nikki earned her bachelor's from Ivy's School of Business and then worked at Ivy for 5 years. She joined Rotman in 2012 and immediately became the Director of Admissions. She likes to describe herself on her LinkedIn page as the Chief Talent Scout for Rotman, and I think she's done a great job of uncovering gems in that role, largely because she has a very strategic and thoughtful approach to the admissions process. Nikki, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks, Linda. It's great to be here.
So happy to have you back again. Can you give an overview of the admissions process at Rotman? Not so much how is an application processed, but what are the different elements in the application that the applicant has to produce for you, and then what happens to them?
Sure. We require, of course, a number of components to get a sense of an application or an applicant's abilities, track record, and future potential. So we're looking at a process that requires an online application that asks a series of questions. There is one required essay question, mm-hmm. one reflection piece, which is a 3 to 5 word question, part of the online application. We then require, of course, transcripts, some sort of standardized test, whether that be the GMAT, GRE, or CFA level 3. Mm-hmm. We also ask for 2 references, and candidates are also required to do a video interview, and there are 2 questions as part of the video interview. And this year we've introduced a new timed written response that is an on-demand written response. It is a maximum experience of 10 minutes. And then last but not least, our candidates are all interviewed. Everyone who receives an offer of admission is interviewed by invitation as the final part of the admissions process.
Okay, great. So that's your overview. But before we go into some of those different elements, I'd like to know, one of the more interesting innovations at Rotman was an attempt to step back and see what in the admissions process correlates well with post-MBA employment. And I read about this on Poets and Quants, and we're going to link to that article from the show notes, which will be at info.accepted.com/121. But can you describe that initiative, that analytical process that you went through, and then what were some of the results of the study?
Absolutely. It was an exciting project for us. Some of the big questions that we've been asking really are around kind of the ethics behind admissions decisions. So I think, you know, every school wants to admit candidates that are going to be successful academically and successful in their careers. And I think the biggest challenge for admissions people is actually the latter piece. The vast majority of our applicant pool, and probably at most places, have the academic aptitude to get through an MBA program. So the bigger challenge is, how do we select talent that is going to achieve the career goals or career success, however it is that they define career success? And my personal belief is that that's an important part of the admissions process, to actually integrate and ask that question. As we're making an offer of admission to a candidate, we should be thinking about employability and careers. It should be integrated into the process. So we worked very closely, and this was an initiative led by the managing director of the Rotman School at the time. to identify as many variables as we possibly could. And we literally looked at candidates over a five-year period, identified 95 different sort of measurable data points that we had throughout their time, from their application essay, their time in the program, data that we had tracked and collected, and literally hired a statistician to come on board at Rotman and run his analysis on, and it was essentially, it was a logistic regression model, so a little beyond the scope of my daily work, but what he was looking for was identifying predictors within the student population that was unemployed 3 months after graduation. So that percentage of the population, was there something that we could learn about students who weren't securing employment at that time? And mm-hmm. could we then somehow use that information to help us predict or ask good questions about the applicants we were seeing and use that as a decision tool for admitting future candidates?
Mm-hmm.
So we ran the regression analysis and determined that there were a number of criteria that were statistically significant to predicting unemployment 3 months post-graduation, and then there were a number of criteria that were completely insignificant to that. And I think the most interesting observation from all of that came around the GMAT. And in some ways it was surprising, in some ways it wasn't. So, you know, GMAT is, we think, you know, in most places it is, of course, correlated to academic success. But what we found was that the overall GMAT score wasn't statistically significant. It wasn't predicting employment or unemployment. The one piece of it that was actually the AWA score, mm-hmm. which is something that isn't usually a part of the GMAT that schools spend a whole lot of time thinking about. So it really was kind of an aha moment for us and an important observation in thinking about what that might tell us about candidates' ability to be, you know, to achieve career success post MBA.
What about IR, the integrated reasoning?
The IR, the news is still out on that because we were looking at complete data sets. So the students were graduating cohorts from 2009 to 2013.
So you didn't have that.
We didn't have IR score for those students. So that will be kind of a next iteration of this analysis, and I think that'll be a very interesting piece. What I've heard from most recently is that IR, they've done some validity studies correlating IR to GPA, and that it's more highly correlated than total score. So I'll be very interested to see what that impact is on career outcomes, if any.
What did correlate positively?
So the things that were...
Other than the and the AWA, you mentioned that.
AWA was one. Undergraduate GPA was another.
Uh-huh.
And the interview rating from the admissions committee as part of that process, the admissions process, was actually also statistically significant. Those were kind of our three biggest indicators of post-MBA success.
Okay. I'm thinking about some of the GMAC data, recruiter data. It's kind of going through my head, which shows that the recruiters really value communication skills. So you're saying the AWA correlates, the interview correlates. The GPA doesn't quite fit that so much, though it's showing other things, I think. That's just what flashed through my head as you were talking. Now,
it makes sense.
The newest element in your application is the timed written response. And we're going to circle back to this, the study that you did. But for right now, can you just describe that initiative? Well, not that initiative. Can you describe what the time written response is? I mean, you did a minute ago, but can you go over it again? And just tell us, why did you start with it? Why did you introduce this element to the application?
So to start with what it is, the time written response is delivered through our video provider, Kira Talent. And the time written response, essentially what happens is the students will see a question. So there's, you know, some context to the question so they understand why we might be asking it. I think that will help people feel like there's some relevance to why they're being asked to do this.
Yeah.
And then a written question. So this will pop up on their screen when they say, okay, I'm ready to do the timed written response. And then a timer begins on their screen, and they have 10 minutes to type out It's designed to mimic an email communication. So we have a random bank of over 20 questions that we're starting with, and randomly one of those questions will come up for candidates, and they have 10 minutes to think about it, write a response, and finish that part of the assessment. So it's designed to sort of be kind of a mock email setting. The reason that we introduced it to answer that part of the question is it kind of goes back to our whole approach on admissions is to continuously think about, are we doing things that are meaningful and relevant, and are we actually getting the output out of each component of the process that we are intending to? And one of our challenges has been around looking at the importance of communications and the importance of AWA, the essay, which we of course think is a valuable piece of the process, but the observation was that both of those are kind of very reflective writing samples or reflective writing opportunities where an essay is valuable because it's so thoughtful, and I think it's showcasing the extreme polish that one can have in their communication style. And the AWA, the content isn't something that the candidate maybe is passionate about or owns, but it shows their ability to communicate persuasively.
Mm-hmm.
What was missed was an opportunity to get sort of that raw business communication. That's something that's so important to the day-to-day performance of students in the program, whether it's communicating with one another, with potential recruiters, with faculty, and of course is something, as they graduate and go back to the real world in their careers, that their kind of natural communications ability, their written presence, if that is a good terminology for it, is something we wanted to understand as part of their sort of their full range of potential, and get a better sense of what is their core style and kind of their authentic way of writing.
It almost sounds like a mini Blue Book exam. I don't know if you had those and if it exists in Canada, but does it? Do you have those things? Yeah.
We don't, but I understand.
The term?
Yeah, exactly.
Though maybe, again, because you only have 10 minutes, Blue Book exams were a lot longer.
And 10 minutes, quite honestly, is far too long. Like, most of us wouldn't take 10 minutes to think about and write every email that we draft through the day. But we understand how high pressure this the MBA admissions process is, and didn't want to create something with undue anxiety around the timing, particularly because there's a stopwatch essentially up on the screen
right
as you're writing. So we wanted to ensure that's more than enough time in order to draft an email that's probably a couple hundred words at maximum.
Right. And I would assume also that for people for whom English is a second language, it takes them a little longer to draft an email. Whenever you're
exactly
writing a second language, it takes a...
We were very careful about not introducing something that would be kind of naturally biased towards a native English speaker, that, if it was a minute or two, we do want to give people some time to think and process and feel good about this part of the process as well.
Did part of this come from the results of your study? That's why I switched the study earlier, because it seems to me to very much correlate. If communications is such an important element in securing employment, then even how you write a short email reflects on you.
Exactly. So we were very interested in better understanding communication abilities, and
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that did come from the results of the study, and then combining that with this real feeling of, it was sort of the same logic why we introduced the video, was we didn't have this raw, kind of unpolished, more personal perspective on candidates.
Mm-hmm.
We had the polish from the essays, but we were missing that, and we wanted the video piece to give us a richer understanding of the candidate's verbal communication.
Right.
And I think the written response, our hope for that is it will do the same thing for written communication.
Can you give us a sample question? I know there's one on your blog. Can you give it to us now?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not one of the actual bank of 20 questions.
Right.
But the sample I think I provided was, and there was always some context, and the question will be displayed this way. So it would be something like, You know, MBA candidates are thoughtful and do a lot of research and often attend things like MBA fairs. So imagine that you've attended an MBA fair and you had a great conversation with the school and you're interested in learning more. So that would be the context of the question. And then the question would be, you know, craft an email to an admissions director that you met at an MBA fair requesting to stay in touch and, you know, connecting about the school and why you want to learn more about the program. So we'll do similar things to that. They won't be related to the admissions cycle. They'll be more related to actual things that would happen in the context of a program. So it's much more situational than most other parts of, I think, the admissions process.
Do you have any advice for applicants who are about to start writing this or just got the question or anything like that?
My advice would be, you know, treat it like a day on the job. Don't overthink it. You know, be thoughtful and be careful. Pay attention to details like you would if you were writing an email to your boss or someone in your company. It's not a text message, so be careful about, you know, you want to be professional, but you want to be simple in your communications style. I think most strong business communications are clear and concise. So this is exactly what we're hoping to see with candidates. And we're not, there's no right or wrong answer. We're not as interested in evaluating the content, but it's really more the style and the presence and the personality that we're interested in seeing.
When I remember taking Blue Book exams, I remember no matter how long or short the question was, I would always take a minute or two to just jot down and maybe organize my thoughts.
Yep.
Is there an opportunity for doing that, or there's no paper?
No, there absolutely is. There is that entire 10-minute window, and your response is only submitted if you take the entire 10 minutes. It will submit at the end of the 10 minutes, mm-hmm. But I think the candidates are not being videoed while they're thinking about this. that would be difficult. So there's an opportunity to be thoughtful, to think about, you know, how would I approach this if I genuinely was in this situation? So I think, you know, trying to actually put yourself in that position and think, what would I really say? Not what do I think the school wants me to say. I'm worried that people are going to start to overthink this and over-engineer it in their heads.
Right.
There's no marking guide for the content. What we're looking at is your style and your business communication skills and your written English skills. So that's the most important part. But yeah, you would be thoughtful. You wouldn't just, you know, fire off an email like the kinds of questions we're asking about without thinking about the structure, proofreading, and then hitting send. So I hope that candidates will do the same with this.
Are bullet points or bulleted lists, numbered lists, okay?
I think so. Yeah, we don't have any restrictions in terms of formatting.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine, I can see some great answers that would have sort of bulleted lists or a long answer depending on the question. I can see that there might be a risk to write forever and ever for 10 minutes.
Yes.
That would probably be another piece of advice around things that may not work. There will be no mechanism to stop someone from doing that. They could write, you know, the longest email in the history of email and submit it. But probably not going to be an effective way to answer, you know, a very short question.
I'm sure that 10 minutes does not give the author enough time to write the longest email ever written, because I think I've gotten it. But but I think also at the same time, I would think that the applicant should take, I don't know, 30 seconds, a minute to think about what they really want to say and organize their thoughts. And I would also think that they should allow at least a minute or two at the end for proofreading.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So anyway, that would be my advice. Let's turn to some of the other elements in the application. I know Rotman accepts the GRE, the GMAT, and also all three levels of the CFA. But I assume the CFA is an option basically for those who already have it. In the GRE versus GMAT debate, who should take which one in your view?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there really and truly for us from a school perspective, there isn't a preference. What we do, I think as most schools do, is if we receive a GRE score, we convert it to an equivalent GMAT score using the conversion tool that's publicly available. So there's no mystery if candidates applying using the GRE, they know what they'll be compared against. The one piece of advice that we continually give candidates, though, is knowing what score may be valued by their industry that they're targeting post-MBA. So there are some industries, particularly consulting, where the GMAT score is part of the recruiting scorecard. They're looking at that within the MBA applicant pool. So writing a GRE isn't necessarily positioning you to be competitive if that's your industry target after graduation. So that would be the one component I think candidates should be thoughtful about is, does it matter if I write the GMAT or GRE for the industry that I'm targeting?
Okay. Now, that's if that's their target industry. What if it's the industry they're coming from? I mean, sometimes I've talked about the rumor mill in previous episodes, and this is one of the rumors out there. If you're coming from consulting or you're coming from investment banking, you're coming from a traditional industry that feeds business schools, is there a preference for GRE or GMAT?
We really and truly do not have a preference. Both of them, I think what a standardized test score does is kind of one, there's some sort of intellectual aptitude that it's demonstrating at some level. But the other thing it demonstrates is just your commitment to studying, your perseverance, your resilience, your dedication. And those are the two things from an admissions perspective that we gain from assessing standardized test scores. So there really and truly is not a preference. Apart from us giving some strong counsel around ensuring that you're keeping your career options open. So even if you come from consulting, but you are, 100% focused on a career that is not consulting, I don't think we would not look negatively on a candidate who wrote a GRE in that case.
Okay. Now, the video essay is now 3 years old. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because we covered it very thoroughly in the last time I had the pleasure of talking to you, and that was in episode 27, which any listener can find at info.accepted.com/27. But has anything significantly changed in the way that Rotman does its video essays? Can you, I guess, just briefly highlight what it is and how that works?
Yeah, we've been very happy with the video component and haven't made major changes apart from continuing to grow our bank of questions. We're asking one question that is kind of more personality or values driven and one that's kind of more experiential. So we haven't made any major changes. We find that's the right fit for what we're trying to assess from the video.
Okay, great. And again, that episode was a super episode. So anybody interested in tips on the video essay, which is also used at other schools, please refer to info.accept.com/27. Throughout this interview, we focused on different elements of the application and the Rotman application and kind of dissected it, right? Well, you mentioned the transcript. Why do you think the transcript correlates so well with success, post-MBA success or post-MBA employment, really?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's one that we thought a lot about after getting the data back. And more than anything else, I think the main reason is it's one of the few data points that we have in the process that represents a lengthy period of time.
Yeah.
And for most students, looking at, and our undergrad GPA is based on their final year average. So it usually demonstrates that students have committed to an area of study that they're interested and passionate about, and in most cases, their GPA has continued to increase and improve until their final year. So the reason I think it's most correlated with career success isn't so much because of the subject area within the GPA. That wasn't what was most relevant in terms of the data, but Rather, what we're seeing from a high GPA is someone who is, you know, incredibly hardworking, is committed, is dedicated, can balance, you know, has strong time management skills as an undergraduate, maturity, self-awareness, can, all of the kind of softer skills that go into success as an undergraduate student, managing deadlines, and those are, of course, critical for career success as well. So I think it's more about, you know, what made you successful in your GPA than what you actually studied, and that's the reason it's translated into career success.
Makes sense to me. Now, at the end of the day, you're not going to admit a GPA or a test score or even a timed written response. You put all the elements together to get a picture of a human being, an individual. What gets you excited in a positive way about the human being that you meet through the applications?
Yeah, that's a great question. And coming off of a series of MBA fairs recently, it's always a question that, you know, candidates end with, how do I stand out and what really gets me noticed? I think, so there are a few things that really differentiate and get us excited about candidates. And a big one is talking to people that have actually had and made a significant impact. So we don't just care about experience, although yes, we want to see that you've had great experience, that you've had exposure in a company, but what we get really excited about is someone who, you know, has made a positive impact, whether it's on their organization, their community, but that really takes ownership of initiatives and changes things for the better. So we want those kinds of people, you know, in our community, in our school, and to be alumni of our institution. So that we get really excited about. And on a similar note, we've taken a lot of guidance and learning from the way that, you know, some best practices in terms of corporate recruiting. And what the other thing that we get really excited about are sort of unique spikes that candidates have. So, you know, I think of orientation always, or talking to students and asking them to tell me about the most memorable people in their class. And it's never, you know, I talked to someone who had a 4.0 GPA today. I was really excited. And, you know, in my class, you know, there's a surgeon, there's an Olympic gymnast, there's someone who has their pilot's license. It's these interesting passions and spiky achievements that, you know, are the things that are really memorable, you know, in addition to having everything else. You know, they tick all those other boxes and then have these amazing other achievements that just make them fascinating.
Okay. Any final words of wisdom or advice that you can provide MBA applicants?
Yeah, I mean,
other than be a surgeon or a pilot or...
Yeah, get your pilot's license.
I know what you mean. I mean, yeah. You're basically saying have something that you do that really fascinates you, and that fascination you can transmit to somebody else.
That's right. And I think maybe I would translate that into final advice. I spoke to a young woman recently about her resume, and I was giving her some feedback, and she was a classically trained musician. You know, she was participating in a community orchestra. She wasn't a musician by trade. She was an analyst in a company. And it came out in conversation, and I looked at her resume, and that wasn't included anywhere. I would have never known that about her if it hadn't kind of come up coincidentally. So I think, you know, one of my pieces of advice would be, when you're thinking about how do you position yourself for it being admitted to a top program? It's knowing all of the things that make you, you know, unique and fascinating, and not losing those passions, because those are actually the things that are going to make you stand out. And I think, unfortunately, too many candidates make the mistake of trying to become too polished or too much of a certain type that they think a school is looking for. But we really care about, you know, your track record of leadership in undergrad. We still want to hear all of that stuff. Our our career coaches are going to clean up your resume once you're an MBA student, and you may have to part with all of those accomplishments and, you know, not tell us about your, you know, your recent experience in whether it be Toastmasters or, you know, backpacking around the world a couple of years ago. But we really care about learning more about those passions, because they're interesting and they tell us so much about what motivates you and what drives you, and, you know, whether or not you're kind of a curious person and interested in exploring how the world works. So I think that would be my advice, is don't lose what makes you unique in pursuit of MBA admissions. We actually really care deeply about that.
Thank you. I think that's great advice. Nikki, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Rotman's MBA program?
Candidates can definitely learn more about our program by engaging with us on our website, through social media, and we host a series of virtual events as well. So I hope you'll connect with us there.
Okay. And listener, I want to thank you too for joining Nikki DeSilva and me for our 121st episode. And you'll be able to find the links that Nikki just referred to at info.accepted.com/121. We'll include links in the show notes at that URL. A few reminders before we bring this show to a close. The first one is that we have prepared a special resource for you, video essays, the what's, why's, do's, and don'ts. You can download that at info.accepted.com/121download. Again, if you want just a tip sheet, video essays, the what's, why's, do's, and don'ts, this is from Accepted, it's not from Rotman, for better or worse, you can get that at info.accepted.com/121download. A couple other things I want to mention before we close. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admissions Straight Talk, especially if you leave the 5 shiny stars. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave that review. If you are planning to take the GMAT in the near future, please join me for a webinar hosted by Accepted and presented by Magoosh. The webinar is called 5 Killer GMAT Prep Tips, and it will be held on October 14th. Again, we'll link to the registration page in the show notes. And finally, if you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/121. It's really easy to ask your question. You just leave a comment on the blog. You can also feel free to share a thought, concern, or idea. We're developing a wonderful and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to participate. One last time, if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/121 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.